having Colonel Jim Hammerman with us. But right now I want to mention that our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. Those of you who are regular listeners to our programs realize that it is our recurrent theme that there are two major goals of the people working behind the scenes and the spiritual forces that motivate them and that energize them. One is the desire for a world government. The other is the desire for a new world religion, and of course going along with that for the destruction of Christianity. Now, Colonel Hammerman served in the military as a chaplain, and now he actually brings a number of chaplains and supervises a number of chaplains serving within the various branches of the military, and is very, very concerned about what is happening within our military, the effort to take prayer and mention of God out of the Air Force Academy. You know, the military has always acted under a different set of rules and regulations than the general population, because the military certainly had a necessity. This necessity of the military was to protect our country. And men will not necessarily fight for a country, but they'll fight for God and country and for family. And God, family, and country in that order were really the major motivation for our men time after time when they've gone into battle. Well, there is an effort to destroy their faith. They'll simply be mercenaries out there fighting for a paycheck. And, of course, I think everybody should be concerned because the attack on Christianity in the military is an attack on the very substance of our military. And with that as the background, Colonel Hammerman, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, it's a joy to be with you because I've listened to your program many times over the years and in person when you were here in Dallas, and I greatly respect what you're doing, and if we don't have peace, voices and people like you, we'll lose this great land that God gave us.
Well, I think we're well on the way to doing that simply because most people really don't understand that we are under attack today, not from outside, but from within, and the attack is upon the sovereignty of our nation and the faith of our people. So, and right now, of course, this is being beautifully demonstrated with what's happening in the military. So why don't you pick up this story there, Colonel?
Well, this started centering around the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. And it started because the shift in religious demographics in the United States. There's more and more of the church members that are evangelicals, and therefore there's more and more chaplains in the military. And I'm talking about Bible-believing evangelicals who take it seriously about the Great Commission. And when this began to happen in the Air Force Academy, and there was a one-star general up there that was a Christian, the football coach was, and some other people, and to attract attention to the situation from a very liberal viewpoint, and sometimes I feel like saying infidel viewpoint, a woman chaplain up there retired. Now let me inject one little sentence here, and I'll say no more. She retired so she'd have a national voice in the news. She wears men's clothes and men's haircut. I don't understand that. But she got her point across, and out of this, came some real restrictions, first of all at the Air Force Academy, and then it spread across the Air Force, and then the Secretary of the...
Why don't you just hold that thought right there? But basically, this is becoming a nationwide effort to take God out of our military.
Hold that thought.
All right, Colonel, go ahead and pick up the story there.
It started a number of years ago as an anti-Jesus, an anti-Christ movement. I just call it for what it is. And now it has become an anti-God movement in the United States. Now, the one that then carried it forth from the Air Force Academy was a former graduate of the Air Force Academy, a Jewish man out in Phoenix, Arizona. And he had two sons up there. One graduated last year and one's a junior this year. They were Jewish. And then it was picked up by two things. First of all, General John Jumper, who was a top general in the whole United States Army, appointed a retired Navy rabbi named Reznikoff had it appointed by the Secretary of the Air Force, but it was really John Jumper that did it. At that time, there was an acting Secretary of the Air Force, and he did about what the general wanted. They were in between Air Force secretaries. One had been asked to resign because he let some contracts that cost us a few extra $1 million, and they asked him to resign, and they had an interim. They moved an assistant Air Force up, and he did what General Jumper wanted. Now, he had become acquainted with this Christian-hating rabbi.
And I really think that what we have to understand is that it has nothing to do with their religion. It is as they hate Christianity. And there are people, whether they be Jewish or else, that hate Christianity. A lot of Jews are very supportive because they recognize that, you know, it is because of the Christian faith that Jews have been accepted and have prospered here. But, of course, they are people who hate Christianity, and whatever their religion be or whatever their racial origin would be, it is their anti-Christian bias and their hatred of Christianity that's the problem.
Sure. Well, in fact, the Jewish Knesset has said they've come to understand that only born-again Christians in America, they are the only friends they have.
Right.
And I attended such a meeting with quite a few of them here this past fall, and 3 days over by the airport here in Dallas. And they're beginning to understand, and many of the rabbis in Israel understand, that if they have any friends in America, they are the Bible-believing Christians of America. And but the sad part is, Dr. Stan, that there's a lot of infidels in America's pulpits. Therefore, in the chaplaincy of the military, there are some, and also there are infidels in high places in government. And some of them are in the Department of Defense, and about a year ago, they tried, and I have the names and all, but I won't give you those.
Well, I'm going to just ask you to hold that thought for just a minute as we bring our other stations back on board.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Colonel Ammerman was just talking about, of course, this organized effort to undermine Christianity in our military. Go ahead, Colonel.
There was a move in the Department of Defense to call all chaplains religious ministry professionals. And as the military does, they're going to use the first letters of that, which is RMPS. And immediately, chaplains were beginning to be called rumps. Now, the devil himself did that. Whether the people that was the instruments of the devil knew it or not, they certainly contributed to it. And we made a stand on that and got that stopped. I've been an activist since I was a junior in high school. When I found out that in our way of life and our government, and I carry a copy of the Constitution with me, and I realize that we the people own this country if we'll stand up for it. And so we got that stopped, and they were called chaplains again. And the reason that was stopped is because the Wiccans wanted some chaplains, and they don't call their leaders ministers or clergy at all. And so they were, for a very few people, and there's not one on active duty yet, they were willing to change what they call all the chaplains in all the services. So we have that insidious thing. And I deal with this all the time at Washington because I'm in contact with some branch of the Pentagon almost daily from my office.
No, but we don't have any witches, but do we have any Satanist chaplains yet?
Well, they have some services, and they allow them, and one of the groups that's been there for a long time is over at the hospital where everyone's evacuated that comes out of the war zone.
In other words, they have a Satanist there posing as a chaplain to greet our returning soldiers. What sort of madness is this, Colonel?
Well, it's because we have people that won't stand up for what's right.
Right.
And so they allow these people. I became aware of it in 1972 when I had half of the chaplains in Europe under my responsibility. And I was visiting people down there in Landstuhl, a big hospital all of us know about because of the war going on now. And as I started to leave, you can only go one way around that big hospital building, and as I exited just before dark, it was after duty hours, I saw a bunch of naked young Americans over in the pine trees. And so I just circled back around, went to the officer of the day that was on duty that night in charge of the hospital, and said, "What's with these naked people out there?" And he said, "Oh, those are... you know, they're worshiping Satan." And I said, you mean you know it and let it go on here on a military reservation? Oh, yes. So I stayed there that night, and I went to a movie that night. I was going to see the hospital commander the next morning about it. And the movie there in the Landstuhl Hospital, when they started the movie, at that day and time, I remember this in the early 70s, they always played the national anthem. Not a person stood up. So I reported that the next day, and I said, is this part of America? Am I a taxpayer paying for this kind of stuff? And that kind of disturbed them. But we have people that will allow things like that to happen. And this thing has grown and grown, and the devil wants God's place. He always has, and that's why I got kicked out of heaven, of course. So we need to make a stand on these issues, and there aren't many people who will take a stand anymore because there's a term called political correctness. That's thinking our nation. I have a daughter that's teaching school for the 36th year. I'm 81 years old. And she's 36 years of teaching, and it doesn't matter whether the kids learn anything or not. You must make sure that they feel good about themselves.
I bet that really irks her, no end.
Oh, it breaks her heart. She comes by at least twice a week to cry on Dad's shoulder because it's so heavy. The other thing is, she has only one student in a class of 30 that's not an illegal alien. That's our America today, and we need to do something about this, but that's another point. Now, let me proceed with how this thing grew. General Jumper wanted Rabbi Reznikoff, who was a retired Navy rabbi and had served in the joint headquarters with him in Stuttgart, Germany, called UCOM, where he commanded all the uniformed people in Europe. Now, General Jumper retired about a year ago, and in his farewell speech, he gave away his true feeling. He told this story. Now, remember, it's his retirement ceremony after 30 years of active duty. And he said there was a general took command recently of a lesser command in Germany, in the Air Force. I don't know if it's in Germany. And said this commander said, I'm a man of faith. Now, notice how even-handed this is. I am a man of faith and of prayer. He could have been praying to a stump. He didn't say. But he said, I'm a man of faith and of prayer. And if we face things while I'm in command here that seem insurmountable, bring it to my attention. If we can't do anything about it, we'll pray about it. And then General Jumper said this. And I have a witness to this thing that was present when it happened. And it's a matter of record. It's on a tape. And he said, that officer does not deserve to wear the Air Force uniform. Well, that gave Reznikoff a signal to stomp on Christians. And I'm still trying to get proof of this to stand in court, but Reznikoff, when he was assigned on the West Coast to a Navy facility a number of years ago that had been built in World War II, and there was a cross on the steeple. And he had a ladder brought and put up for him, and he climbed up and sawed it off and threw it to the ground. Now, in today's military, they don't allow any service to be set forth around the clock. And so it would have been one thing if he had said, have the engineers take it down. It's another thing when he personally wanted to take it down. That's why I call him a Christian hater. And I don't put all rabbis in that category. The endorser for the rabbis is a longtime friend of mine, David Lapp, and he says that I ought to pray like a Christian because he expects to pray like a rabbi. And we both know and recognize each other that way. And lest some of our listeners think that I'm some rabid guy that's against everyone that doesn't believe like I do, when I was the 5th Corps chaplain in 72, 73, and 74 in Europe, and that's the command that went in and did the battle on this latest thing in Iraq. And it was a large command at that time. There were 83 chaplains under my responsibility. And two CIA people, civilians of the Department of Defense, came to me that were Muslims. And they said, we want a place where our people can have their daily prayers. And I said, good, we'll give you one right now. And I took them a block away, didn't call for a sedan, we just walked over there. There was a large room on the side of a chapel, and I had it given to them right then, with a separate entrance and with a lock between it and the rest of the chapel. And I said, there's your place of prayer. As we walked back, they said, "We planned to make an issue out of this and get you in trouble. And all you did was say, let me get my hat and we'll go over there." And so then, and I think I ought to add this, then they would come by and talk to me about their faith and ask me about mine. Because they had asked for this for several senior chaplains and been told no, they couldn't have it. But under our Constitution, they have a right to have their religion as they believe it. And I stand up for that right and gave them the first place in the U.S. military on the continent. Now, since then, there's one down at Ramstein where an Air Force chaplain has done the same thing for them. But let me add this, Dr. Stan. They will tell you, I said, what are the main pillars of your faith? And they said, there are five. And they sound pretty good. You do alms, you do your prayers daily. If you're a man, you have your head shaved and you go to Mecca. And you practice the routines of the church, but they don't tell you that there's seven. And these two gentlemen told me there were seven. And I said, what are the other two? And they said, a personal jihad and a corporate jihad, a holy war. But we don't tell about that because it doesn't sound too good. So I think our listeners all need to know that there are seven pillars to the Muslim faith. And it is not a peaceful religion, as our president has said several times. He's deceived on that. I've read the Quran through twice since September the 11th. And there's 34 places in there it teaches that you and I and the Jewish people, the people of the book, are to be killed. So our nation needs to know that. And that's not hearsay. That's a proven fact. And since we're dealing with this as a worldwide war, because 80% of the nations of the world are or could be controlled by Islam. So if you don't know who your enemy is, the enemy will win every time. I want people to just put that in the back of their mind. But what Reznikov, the rabbi, did, he had permission to do it, and he paid with your funds and mine for a Yale Divinity School liberal committee to go up to the Air Force Academy, and they came back, and out of that came a four-page document by the Air Force. And as soon as I read that, I threw down the gauntlet. I said, I'm not going to just say, let's stop here. I'm going to take back some ground. And so I wrote a letter. This is last October. I wrote a letter, and there's a way you can put that on every congressman and senator's desk, and I did that. It cost a couple hundred bucks. And I got over 100 responses to that, and I began to pursue that. And what I've done at this time with several trips to Washington, I walked the halls of Congress. I have a congressman, not mine, my congressman won't do a thing unless my skin is black here in Dallas. I'll just tell that like it is because that's the truth. If your skin's not black, you're not represented by this congresswoman. But anyway, I went up there and I found a congressman from North Carolina named Walter Jones, and he was disturbed by these four pages as I was, and he said, I'll be your point man with this. And so he drafted a letter, and 69 congressmen and women signed that, and it went to the president. And with it was a draft of a presidential executive order, which has been there now for a month in the Oval Office, and the president has not seen fit to sign it.
Now, what does it call for?
Well, it calls for a level playing field, that all chaplains will pray according to their faith at all times and all places.
Well, I think that sounds logical, but you know, you wonder why the president wouldn't sign something like that. We'll be right back here.
Yes.
Well, Colonel, pick up the story from there. Anyway, you've got the letter sent to the president over the signatures of a significant number of congressmen, and the president said they this didn't go through in the form of a legislation then.
Well, no, but you say once he signs that in 30 days, unless one house or the other turns it down, it becomes law the same as if it went through both houses and was signed to the president. That's an executive order. By the way, Bill Clinton signed about 100 of them, and a lot of those need to be stricken, but anyway, that's another story.
And, Chris, I think it's very interesting that George Bush didn't see fit to stricken any of those executive orders that Bill Clinton had been put in, so did it really make a lot of difference whether we had a Democrat or Republican there? The Republicans left all of those terrible executive orders. Some of those already, of course, leave America open naked in face of a nuclear attack, but that's a different subject. Bill Clinton deemed that if we were attacked, we would not retaliate until after they had decimated our cities and our military, and we might even have anything to attack with, but we would never retaliate until after millions and millions of Americans have been dead. You wonder why George Bush would never take that back. But anyway, pick up the story there, please, Colonel.
Okay, so that went over to the White House, but it didn't stop there. Now, we had a senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham. See, and I couldn't vote for him. It's just like when chaplains weren't going to be allowed to wear their crosses in Desert Storm. And so I called the man who was head of the Foreign Relations Committee at that time, and that was a man that I could never vote for because, you see, I've never been a resident of North Carolina. I've been assigned there twice when I was in the Green Berets and when I was in the 82nd Airborne Division. But I called Senator Jesse Helms, head of the Foreign Services Committee. He was chairman of it, and I explained to him that they were going to send our chaplains to war, calling them morale officers, and I said if they ever do that, the chaplaincy is dead because the people that hate religion in the military will say we went through a war without a chaplain. And so he went over to the Saudi embassy, talked to one of the King Saud's 400 sons. I guess most of you people know he has many wives and many, many, many sons. And the ambassador to the United States was one of those sons who called his father. And 3 days later, our chaplains could throw on their crosses and go into Saudi Arabia and into Islam over there and fight Desert Storm. And so that tells you I'm a bit of an activist. I believe that we shouldn't wait and see what happens. We ought to make it happen the right way. And there are people in high places, but they have to know what's going on, and sometimes we have to be the ones to inform them. But out of this came a four-page document, which since has been boiled down to one page, but it says the same thing as a four-page. And Reznikoff has been in charge of this thing all the way. And out of that, now, commanders in the Air Force are scared to let a chaplain pray. Now, let me make a distinction here, lest somebody understand. They can be what they're supposed to be, but only if they're holding a service inside a chapel or a field service in the field. But any time there's another prayer, and many times in the military, people want prayer. I have 24 chaplains right now in Iraq and several more in Afghanistan. And before our troops go out on those very deadly missions, they ask the chaplains to pray over them. You know, even young, brave men, when they face their own mortality.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, Colonel Ammerman was just saying that the chaplains over in Iraq, very often when they're going out on patrol, will ask the chaplain to pray for them, because even brave men who are going into battle realize, of course, their fate does lie in the hands of our Lord. So pick up the story, Colonel.
And so now those same chaplains have been told you can't pray in Jesus' name. Now, let's go back as to how we have the chaplaincy. The chaplains are ministers on loan to the U.S. government. Otherwise, it'd be illegal to have a chaplaincy. And the First Amendment to the Constitution covers that in that it says we're to provide for the religious needs of those people that are in places where they can't meet their own needs. They're not free to go where they are. If they're in a VA hospital, they're not free, or if they're in a federal prison or state prison. And so therefore, the best thing we can provide them is a chaplaincy of clergy that's on loan from the denomination. And to show you how much that's true, I have a responsibility for every one of those 500 chaplains, and I have the responsibility to the extent that I can even pull them off of active duty whether the commander wants them off or not, because they're on loan to the U.S. government. Now, that's how much we abide by the Constitution. And so at the same time, then, they are there because they're ordained and, furthermore, endorsed specifically for the chaplaincy out of my office. And now they've been ordered to pray differently than we believe in prayer. It started out with only Christian chaplains not being allowed to pray in Jesus' name. It's now extended where Muslim and Jewish chaplains cannot pray, where it would sound like that. And I have one case with documents that stand in court, and they're in the hands of Congress and the Senate, for one of our Air Force chaplains out at the Air Force base at LAX has just retired early. He's processing out of the Air Force now because he was called in by his Air Force commander. He's a major. He'd been in a number of years. He had had prior service in the Army, and so he had passed 20 years active service. And he was called in by his commander, who had the senior judge advocate of that command there, and said, if you pray, and it sounds like, not only in Jesus' name, but it sounds like maybe you included something from the Bible, we will have you investigated and court-martialed. And he said, oh, no, you won't. I will, within the hour, have in my letter of retirement, and you will have no authority over me whatsoever. And I have those documents in my office right now. That's how bad this thing has become, because some commanders are afraid and some are just infidels that don't want anything to do with God, and so they're using this as a cover to deny our service people from having the spiritual needs met.
And I think if our listeners have to understand that there's no logic behind this unless you understand there's a conspiracy against God to destroy the faith of our people. And certainly the military has been specifically targeted. We've seen what they've done in the public schools and how they're using our schools now to destroy the faith of our children. They do the same thing in university. That's where they wiped out my faith some 60-some years ago when I, 60 years ago when I was an undergraduate at the University of California. They know exactly what they're doing, but now, of course, it's just so flagrant. And the trouble is that where is the church? Where are they standing up and doing anything? I mean, here's an 81-year-old, retired chaplain, Colonel Ammerman, who's on the front lines of this battle, trying to get something done. But where are our major Christian leaders? Where are our major conservative or Republican leaders? Where is our Christian president who had the ability, the power, chief executive of this country, leading our men, our brave men, into battle? But he doesn't seem to be concerned about their spiritual health, does he?
No, well, he could make one telephone call and stop what we're fighting now. He could call the Secretary of Defense and say to him, I want this stopped, and it would stop that very day. But he's chosen to do nothing, and I'm greatly disappointed in him. Although I voted for him, it's the best I thought we could do at the time. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners maybe voted for him and have been disappointed. And I don't know that we'll have anyone to vote for the next time that will do any better, because I think that there's a master plan to destroy this country, and there can only be a one-world government if America is brought down.
And, of course, you have to destroy not only the sovereignty of our nation, but
yes,
the faith of our people. Well, I'm not as pessimistic as you are. I think we may have a very good man to vote for in 2008, but that's a subject for another evening and another discussion. So, anyway, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Colonel Jim Ammerman as we explore what's really going on behind the scenes and the fact that there really is an organized, orchestrated, coordinated effort, conspiracy against God. We'll be right back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Colonel Jim Ammerman, and certainly he's on the front lines of this battle. And he actually, could you explain maybe to our listeners a little bit about how this works? I mean, I don't think the average individual understands that the chaplains are on loan to government. Now, do they receive a military salary and military benefits?
Yes. They receive the same pay and allowances as other officers of the same grade. They have a promotion system. There's a two-star general, the head of the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force chaplaincy, and there's a two-star, one-star as a deputy. I was full colonel myself and drew the pay and allowance there. I've been drawing a retirement now because I had over 26 years active service. But And there's some question about the legitimacy of the chaplaincy, but it stood the test before the Supreme Court twice on the basis of what does the people in uniform need. And on that basis, we cannot deny them the needs and send them into combat without the spiritual needs as they see their spiritual needs. So it's a very fair system, although it's not always fairly administered, Dr. Stan. But I want to tell you what happened at the Army Chief of Chaplains meeting. He brings together the top 500 Army chaplains of the world, active National Guard and Reserve, once a year, and we were at Hilton Head this year. And I was there because several of the senior chaplains are under my responsibility. And notice I use the word responsibility, not authority. I feel responsible for them. Of course, I have as much responsibility as I have authority, and vice versa. But I really feel that I am to serve these chaplains and mentor them, and I do that. And several of them have been ripped apart over Jesus' name, such as the one that was threatened with court-martial if he used the name of Jesus. Now, that kind of thing has to stop. And we have a five-year lawsuit going on against the U.S. Navy because they had wronged five of my chaplains because they were Bible believers and prayed in Jesus' name. And so I have a very fine lawyer who served as a line officer, a West Point graduate, and then after he retired, went to law school, George Mason Law School in Washington, D.C. And we've had this lawsuit, and the Navy has dragged anchor for 5 years. And they know that they've lost the thing, but they went to finally the Ninth Circuit Court, which is so corrupt that over half its cases are overturned by the Supreme Court. I'll just give them free publicity here now for what they are.
Oh, you hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Colonel Hammerman. Basically, as a lawyer, was working with them, and they brought a lawsuit against the Navy for actually making the lives of five chaplains very miserable because they had the audacity to pray in Jesus' name, in the name of Jesus Christ. And so, pick up the story there, Colonel.
All right. What has happened since then? When we went before the second district court in Washington, D.C., and by the way, we've been in and out of that court enough now that just going in and out of court cost us well over $100,000, not counting legal fees. That's just getting in and out of court. And the Navy figures that they will use our tax dollars to stop what should be done according to law by breaking us. Well, that's not going to happen because we have some people that are determined that won't happen, including our attorney. He says if he ever gets paid, it'll be the Navy paying him. But here's what happened almost immediately. The judge there in the Second District Court said, well, this is a class action thing, and it ought to go back 20 years, and we brought more stuff in the discovery phase, and he said it needs to go back 30 years, and now, listen to this number, 2,000 former Navy chaplains have joined that lawsuit because they have been wronged by a system that does not really let Bible-believing, Bible-teaching and preaching chaplains have the same opportunities in the Navy that all other chaplains have. So anyway, that shows my concerns. Now, so folks will understand me a little bit better. I'm not some wide-eyed lunatic. I went in the Navy the day I was 17. I'd finished high school at 15. I went in the Navy and served on a destroyer 13 months in the Atlantic, sinking German U-boats. And then I was a radioman, so I read a lot of the messages and found out they needed pilots, and I came back and became a naval aviator by the time the war ended. I did not fly combat because the war ended a month after I completed naval aviation training. Then I went to college and seminary, and I went to a mainline seminary. I went to Southwestern Baptist Seminary, Fort Worth, Texas. I now reside in Dallas. And then I went to Korea in the Korean War and in Vietnam, and I was in Vietnam twice. So I do have a history of being a patriotic American, and I intend to die with that same mindset. But a part of this is the thing you said early on. Our people, majority of our service people know that they're serving God and country. And they're very proud of that. And they also know that they need God when they go into combat. And many times they request, as we said, prayer. And I wish that all the word could get out quite often. A young man that's never been interested in church, a young soldier, man or woman, because we've had over 24 women killed in this war. And now the women's livers don't like for us to tell that because they want more and more women to be in the military, in combat. But women get killed too when bullets fly and when bombs go off. But many times these young men will come up to a chaplain after he's prayed for them before they go out on a mission. And they'll say, you know, I just put my trust in the Lord Jesus Christ. And I wish in every case that those parents next of kin could know that that happened, because they may think their son or daughter died without Jesus Christ. Now, let me just tell you a good thing that the chief of chaplains of the Army did last week, and I was there present for it. He met with the top 500 chaplains in the active reserve and National Guard forces worldwide, the senior ones. And he is a man of color. He's a Presbyterian, a Princeton graduate, who was at Fort Bragg, North Carolina when I was there. He was a sergeant back then. And a fine Bible-believing chaplain led him to faith in Christ. He did not re-enlist, but rather he got out. He'd worked his college off while he's on active duty, and he went to Princeton. And he is not only a practicing Christian, everywhere he goes, he is an evangelist. And he intends to be that. And I've heard him several times, both at graduations and at patriotic days, as well as religious days. And he always, when they introduce him, he says, "Now let me tell you who I really am." And he tells how he became a Christian because there was a good Bible-believing chaplain back when he was a sergeant before he met the Lord. And then he says this, Stan, so you got to give this man a lot of credit. He says, "And everybody here can come to God the same way I did." Now that is a brave man in today's environment. And the number two man there, and I'm going to give all the hope I can to our listeners, the number two man there is a wonderful Bible-believing man, and he's a Baptist, and I've known him for over 25 years, and everywhere he goes, he's the kind of man that really is a witness for the Lord. And when he was assigned to the Pentagon and did not have a pulpit, he and an attorney friend of mine started a church on the street for street people with the gospel. Now, in the Air Force, there's a tremendous thing going on. The best leadership ever in these two services, chaplaincy. The senior chaplain there is a Southern Baptist, and the deputy, or the one star, is an Assemblies of God. The first time ever that a Pentecostal has been given a star in any service. Then, in the Navy, right now, the senior man with two-star admiral, is a man that's a Roman Catholic. He's an Italian Roman Catholic and very much what you'd expect a Roman Catholic priest to be. And so therefore I say he's a man of integrity because he's what he claims to be. See, I respect people for being honest about what they are. But the number two man is a church of the Open Bible small denomination and out of a Bible-believing seminary out in the state of Washington. So that we've never had that kind of leadership before, but there's so much pressure that they can't do really what they're in a position to do because of this anti-Christ, anti-God prevailing spirit that's in high places.
Well, I think it pervades every aspect of our society, but of course it's so troublesome to see it in the military because, you know, the military has always been separate. It's had its own laws, its own rules and regulations, and really always in the past why our Supreme Court has held that the military is separate because of the military necessity to maintain discipline, and so that's why they have a separate law system. That's why they have an entirely different society than the society you and I, at least that I live in, not that you live in. But I think it's really, it's so, when you begin to realize that this too is under attack, that there is an effort to destroy the faith of the people in our military, and the people in charge of this know exactly what they're doing, just like the Supreme Court justices who took God and prayer out of our school knew exactly what they were doing.
Yes.
As the Supreme Court opens the session every day, every time they open, the crier comes in and says, God save the United States.
Yeah.
And this honorable court. And it's all right to mention God and the Supreme Court prayers, Supreme Court chamber, but not in our schools. Come on now. The whole thing was to destroy the faith of our children. But now they want to destroy the faith of our military. So pick up the story there.
Well, and you see, the military is a very closed society. It's almost as closed as a prison. And it has to have the discipline. And let me give a good word for our military and the kind of war that we're in over there in the desert. You know, if we didn't have a highly disciplined and trained force, can you see someone, let's say here's a squad of 8 or 9 men, and they're out and 3 of them get blown to pieces, or all of them but one gets blown to pieces. The reigning person, if he wasn't disciplined, would take his weapon and shoot every Iraqi on sight. That's not happened at all. And they make a lot to do about the bad prison situation over there. One of the prisoners released recently from down in Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, which is under our control. You know, that part of Cuba is under U.S. control. It's not under Castro. And he was released, and he said, let me tell you, this is better than anybody lives in Iraq. And they have air conditioning now. The pictures they show is when they had dog run type fences. That hasn't been there for some time. And they have air conditioning, they sleep on good beds, and they have a choice of meals. They're not asked to eat any pork. You know, we abide by their dietary requirements for their religion. And yet the news continually tries to divide our nation and saying that we're mistreating them. The fact is we've treated them so good, they can hardly believe that we believe what we say. And they're saying that now. And let me toss in another thing here, because it's come up from several things, and yet Marine 4-star General Pace, who is now Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I heard him on TV this weekend, said that there were no weapons of mass destruction except a few old ones. That is not the truth. And I'll tell you who is strangling the truth, and it's President Bush.
And I think that's really so. What you're basically saying is that Saddam Hussein did have weapons of mass destruction, and the president is lying about it. They know they're in Syria. They've always been in Syria, and perhaps a few of them in Iran. I haven't been able to figure out why they've been lying about it, because they know exactly where they are. They have access to the same information I do, or anybody in the listening audience who wants to go up on Google and type in Iraq weapons of mass destruction, Syria. You'll find over 1 million different sites that discuss that, and yet the average American, and certainly Rush Limbaugh, are not aware of that.
Exactly right. And something needs to be done about it, because here's the top general over all our armed forces, Air Force General Pace, saying, perpetrating that lie. Now, I have friends in both the FBI and CIA. I've been around so long. You know, I go back to the early days of World War II. And there's one thing about living this long, and you've lived quite a long while yourself, and you keep learning if you walk around with your eyes and ears open. And I know that one of the reasons that this weapons of mass destruction is hush-hush is because the Germans and the Russians and the French were supplying with everything it took to build those. And they're supposed to be our friends. Well, they're not our friends at all. They want to have a one-world government, and they know that they can't have it without us being destroyed, and so we have leaders that are going along with them to destroy America. But I'll tell you, our military is no stronger than they are spiritually. And our greatest military leaders have stated this. MacArthur read his Bible every day. And one thing he said about brave soldiers, he quoted the Bible where it says, a greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And he'd seen that many, many times on the battlefields of the major wars that our nation's been in. We see it going on today, where men, and sometimes they get a Medal of Honor for it, and sometimes they just die with not even a decoration. But they die for their friends, and they die for this country, and they do it in the name of God and country. and this is trying to be denied them by shutting the mouths of the chaplains. In fact, what's happened in the Air Force, and I want to make this very clear, is in effect, and I've had our attorney write this up and send it to Department of Defense, in effect, the Air Force has come up with a secular religion, a godless religion, that you're not allowed to mention the name of any god, not even a false god. And so it's an illegal, unconstitutional religion without a name god. And that's what we're facing today, and that's what they intend to do to us in the military, because it so easily can be done with an order. But it's also what they plan to do. The people that want to destroy America are trying to do. They've done it in the schools, and now they want to do it across the land. And they're trying in many ways to do that, such as in most cities today, you cannot have a religious meeting in your home without having a question about if you're breaking some ordinance.
And, you know, of course, as we pointed out so many times, we are involved in the spiritual battle. It's sometimes being fought on the political battlefield, and sometimes on a cultural battlefield, and sometimes on an ideological battlefield, and sometimes on the battlefields of the Middle East today. But it is always a spiritual battle. It is the primary force behind everything going on. And until you can recognize that, none of this really makes any sense. Why would the Supreme Court take God and prayer out of our schools? They knew what they were doing. They knew, of course, it would lead to the breakdown of our society and the moral fabric of our society, and that's why they did it. And those of you who haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, need to get it and read it and understand who it was that appointed those Supreme Court justices who set out to destroy the moral fabric of our society. But now, of course, permeating the military, doing everything they can. Now, what's the outlook for this case? When is this case going to go to the Supreme Court?
Well, it may. It can be resolved in the courts, in the halls of Congress. And there's a bill already written that's to go before the Senate and the House. That will, and here's what 100 congressmen and senators have said. We're going to put a law before the president and see if he'll veto that, because we don't think he'll have the courage to veto that.
Well, I hope those that when they pass that law, that they'll put a rider on it saying the courts cannot intervene, because they have the right to do with that. And, of course, they'd never done it. The only people who ever did it was Tom Daschle, when he was Senate Majority Leader. He didn't want the Supreme Court interfering in some special environmental laws. And so he put that rider on, and that takes the Supreme Court out of it. So, you know, but I think that if they pass that law, Colonel, I hope that you will urge them to put that rider on it. They have the right to do it. We are a nation of law, and the ultimate law is in our elected representatives, not in the black-robed people there, who sit in a chamber that opens their sessions every day and says, you know, God bless the United States and this honorable court, or God save the United States and this honorable court. And yet they have ruled that we can't mention God in our schools. So, obviously, there's tremendous hypocrisy there.
Well, now, to further answer your question about how do I think this will come out, because I know our listeners are wondering the answer to that question. There are some very liberal chaplains and former chaplains that don't believe the Bible, and yet they're ordained clergy, and there's whole denominations in America that don't really believe the Bible at all today. And so they're saying, oh, just let the Department of Defense handle this. Well, we've let them handle it, and it's in the fix that it's in. And so we, the people, really get redressed through the people we elect. And that's why I went to the United States Congress. And I've made the trips up there, and just to show you how serious I am about it, I've been going up there on a regular basis. I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning in Dallas, catch the first plane, work all day up there, and get back at midnight. And since I'm old, I'm tough, and I can do that. A young man couldn't probably stand it.
No.
I learned that from eating old roosters and young roosters on the farm, Stan. But, what is at stake is so important that I'm not going to let it die.
No, well, is there anything our listeners could do to help you?
And we do have a lot of people that are helping, and we have people that are calling and emailing and writing their congressmen.
So is there any place that they go to get additional information? Do you have a website?
Yes, we do. And it's Well,
it's Chaplain Full God.
No, that's my website, but I don't have this on it. I'm also the head of an organization called the International Conference of Evangelical Chaplain Sources.
Pull that off right there, please.
Yes.
Well, Colonel, is there a website where people can get more information on this?
All right, I'm pulling that up now. Because I don't use that every day. It's ICECE.org@AOL.com.
Now, ICE?
ICECE.
Right, dot org.
org@AOL.com.
All right, that's an email address then.
Yes, and they can get that, and that keeps it's updated pretty regularly.
All right, fine. So, but basically, then they will actually send you an email, and then you'll keep them abreast by email of what's going on.
Yes.
Well, I hope maybe you can put me on that as well, because we'd certainly like to have that information available so we can let our listeners know. But I think this is so vitally important that people understand that there are people who are countering this, and I understand there are a couple of groups that are really helping. I know that I talked to my good friend, Colonel Ron Ray, and told him I was going to have you on, and he says he knows you quite well.
Oh, yes. He's a great man of God and of our country. Let me tell you a good report from the Army Chiefs meeting at Hilton Head last week. He had one of the speakers there was Franklin Graham that spoke to a plenary session. Now, they had every type of chaplain that we have from every denomination background, including Islam, and rabbis were there and all. And Franklin Graham told the story about Samaritan's Purse. And he told, first of all, how that they had taken literally tons of things over to the tsunami survivors. And he said, did we tell them about Jesus? Only when they asked. He said, we tried to be fair. We didn't try and cram anything down their throat. But they were saying, you know, Islam's not taking care of us. Why are you taking care of us? And he said, it's because of our religious faith. And he told them very clearly, it is because of his faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, God's Son. And then when he finished, by the way, also, he had raised thousands of shoeboxes of toys for people, their children in Bosnia and other places like that had nothing. And, 18-wheeler loads. And so he was invited, President Clinton invited him to the White House because he was doing these things. And while he was there, there was a woman that produced most of these. She was a woman truck driver that came to him with an 18-wheeler load of shoeboxes of things for Christmas for little kids. And so she was invited to go to the White House. And
hold that thought. We'll just let you finish up here. It's just a moment. Well, Colonel Ammerman's telling about the Franklin Graham telling about his story. He's invited to go to the White House because of the good charitable work he's done. Go pick up the story, Colonel.
And this lady that had done a masterful job, an 18-wheeler load, went to the White House, and she was just a truck driver woman, but she cared about people. And so she went in there, and she carried two trash bags full of stuff with her. And he was concerned about her and her husband because they came in with motorcycle T-shirts on and advertising draft beer. And here they're going in there with him. And so he gave her a Samaritan's Purse shirt to put on over it. And she wore that in there. And the president was talking with her and said, you know, this is quite some woman. Is she on your staff? And he said, no. Well, the president said, put her on your staff. And the woman had most of her teeth out, and he said, and buy her a set of teeth. So Franklin Graham had her set of teeth made, and she drove off and left him one morning in a motel and didn't have any teeth at all.
But, well, Colonel, we're going to have to let you go, but thank you so very much for being with us, and I hope we can get you on some of our other programs. Our different audiences, I want them to hear your story.
Well, I'm sure the people that listen to you are people that care about America, and may I say to every one of you, keep caring, and God bless you.
God bless you, too. Thank you so much, Colonel.
You bet.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we truly are involved in a spiritual battle. for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. There really are forces out there that hate Christianity. There is a satanic conspiracy against God. Satan is not imaginary. There really are demonic forces. If you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the video or DVD, you really need to. And let me suggest, if you'd like to know more, our telephone number 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will give a serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family, because, quite frankly, we need your help to continue getting the truth out across America about what's really going on and about the spiritual forces that are aligned against Christianity, aligned against America. We have this wonderful new DVD available. It's called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, almost 3 hours long, by our good friend Chris Pinto, and, of course, produced with the help of David Bay of Cutting Edge Ministries. We have our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, and it's a three-pamphlet set made up of our newsletters, and it simply puts together all of the information you need to have to understand what's going on. And we have a number of pamphlet sets like that, and, of course, you'd like more information. Again, our number is 1-800-544-8927. You can go to our Internet site at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there directly or indirectly 5 hours a day. On the Internet, you can listen to our archive programs. You can listen to our MP3 archive programs. It's all there. We put it there for you without charge because we want you to get the information. Your job is to call your neighbors and friends and get them listening to our programs. And, of course, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free newsletter, give us a call. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. Pray for Radio Liberty. But if we don't have a revival in America, we're going to lose this wonderful country. So till we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. That'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you that the views that we express here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, the supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please don't call in unless we ask for calls, because we have a list tonight. Erskine. And I don't even know Erskine's last name, but everybody knows him as Erskine. He had a very, very popular radio program here a couple of years ago, and certainly on a number of stations all across the country late at night. But more recently, he's certainly on the Genesis Communication. You can hear him every Saturday night there on Genesis, GCNLive.com, on the internet and on shortwave and certainly on the affiliate stations. But I've asked Erskine to come on with us. He certainly has a great grasp of what's going on, and we always have a good time when we talk. So, Erskine, thank you so very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure to be on with you, Dr. Stan, as long as we can be on. Thank the Lord that we are able to be on tonight, because I'm telling you, the time is getting short to where we may not be able to get the truth out.
Well, you know, really what's so frightening is the fact that we know that they just gave Halliburton a massive contract, $300 or $400 million to build detention camps in America for illegal aliens. Now, if anybody really thinks that they're building detention camps for illegal aliens, they've got to be incredibly naive. This is, of course, for dissenters. The same spiritual forces which were alive and well in Nazi Germany are working here. In fact, anybody who's ever done any studying on the Bush family will remember that Prescott Bush worked for Brown Harriman Banking Company, that was actually involved banking for the Nazi movement. And
well, we've got what is coming as the CLIF, Civilian Labor Inmate Facilities, and this is going to be necessary, because in order for a dictatorship to occur in the United States of America, and yes, I did say a dictatorship to occur, there has to be an economic collapse. That's the catalyst that always causes dictatorships to occur, and everything has been done humanly possible to bring an economic collapse of the United States. This allowing all the immigration, illegal immigration, is not an accident. The outsourcing of jobs is not an accident. A lot of the things which have occurred, the spending of money, like it's going out of style in Iraq, is not an accident. It all is designed to weaken the United States of America for an overthrow, and that's exactly where it's heading, and I can tell you who's going to be in charge and what we're heading for.
Well, of course, even Paul Craig Roberts, former Undersecretary of the Treasury during the Reagan administration, and of course he served in a number of key positions in our country, Hoover Institute, other think tanks, within the last week, wrote an article about the coming soft dictatorship. Well, I think he's overly optimistic, but here's a lifelong Republican saying, vote for the Democrats. Vote for the Democrats. We've got to break their stranglehold on our government. Speaking now of the Republican stranglehold, because the Republicans are backing President Bush, I'm not really convinced we get the Democrats in, it's going to change the course of things. I think the leadership of both political parties are dedicated to the destruction of freedom here in America. In the name, of course, of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who we've never, never, never tried to get out of catch. We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. In fact, I was just commenting. Everything is being done here in the name of catching the wicked Osama bin Laden, who is the enemy. And of course, why didn't we try to catch him? We had at least 11 different occasions when we could have got him before 911. knowing full well he'd been involved in terrorist attacks starting in 1992 in Aden, 1993, the World Trade Center, 1994, the Black Hawk Down incident in Somalia, 1995, probably involved with the bombing in Riyadh, 1996, probably involved with the bombing there at the Khobar Towers, certainly 1998 involved with the bombing of our embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, 2000 involved with the bombing of the Cold, declared war in America in 1996 and 1998, according to the former analyst, CIA analyst in charge of tracking Osama bin Laden. And, of course, if any of you would like the documentation on this, we'd be glad to send it to you. And Mr. Schurer, who worked for the CIA for 25 or 30 years, in charge of the CIA desk, there was at least 10 opportunities to get Osama bin Laden. Richard Miniter, in his book, Losing Bin Laden, said there were 11 occasions. That was beforehand. And then we let him go at Tora Bora. They would not allow our special forces to go in. And there's a book on that we carry called Crude Politics. The only trouble is that the publisher wouldn't distribute the book. I was told that by the author. They just didn't feel it was appropriate. So this man talked to the special forces people who came back, who wanted to go in and get Osama bin Laden at Tora Bora, and they wouldn't let him do it. I wonder why. Pick up the story, Erskine.
Well, one of the most interesting aspects of the bin Laden story, here's a man on dialysis. Now, if you're on dialysis, you've got a lot of machinery you're taking around. It's not like it's somebody who is extraordinarily mobile, able to jump over buildings with a single leap, able to outrun a train. This guy isn't Superman. He is quite the opposite. He is a very ill person. As a matter of fact, in July, just before the attack on the World Trade Center in September, Osama bin Laden was where? He was at an American hospital being treated by an American physician. In what city?
Dubai.
Dubai, of the United Arab Emirates. Now, does that tie together with what we've got? He was at an American hospital being treated by an American physician and seen by the CIA station chief in Dubai in July. Let's see, July, August, September? Yes, right, 2 months before. All of this is just adding up to totally ridiculous, and you're looking at the Dubai incident. You have to look at who's making money out of it. And one of the people, through the Carlyle Group and through various members they've put together through Bush's Pilgrim Trust, they put together a company, a consortium that owns this Dubai operation. That's why Mr. Bush is pushing so hard.
Hold that thought right there. Hold that thought, please. Well, I guess this evening is Erskine. Go right ahead. Erskine is basically talking about what's going on as far as why the Bush administration is so intent upon Dubai. I mean, after all, he's never vetoed one piece of legislation that's been sent to him by the Senate. And as he said, well, I didn't know anything about this. This whole decision to turn over our these six major ports, you know, to this company, this United Arab company that's owned by the United Arab Emirates, and of course that's Dubai. You know, I had nothing to do with it. But if you pass legislation saying we can't do it, I'm going to veto it. He's never vetoed one piece of legislation. So why is he so intent to get this thing through? You pick
of
up the story.
He's not going to veto it because his family has stock in this company that has been formed in Dubai. Now, the other thing that is happening that I am much more concerned with than this, even though this is the tip of the iceberg and shows you how ruthless these people are, is the fact that General Primakov, General Karpov, Kalugin, and former East German secret police chief of Stasi, General Marcus Wolf, have all formed a company in Sofia, Bulgaria, that sounds like Trans Global Security Consulting Group, and this is designed to be the security consulting and more specifically training for the heads of what will be in the post-Patriot III environment, the new political organization of Neighborhood Watch, or the CDF, Civilian Defense Force.
And you're talking about here in the United States.
In the United States, it is going to be a new Gestapo, and who could set it up better than former KGB? Bill Frist has deemed it the Secret Service, or the SS Uniform Division, in Senate Bill number 605. Now, what this is designed, absolute spies, the National Security Agency in post-Patriot III environment will form a formal office of print censorship. All this is coming. You've got all these KGB people who are also going to be in charge of the civilian inmate labor facilities, and they have designated it, Primakov calls it this, patriotic education programming.
It'll just run like they had in the Gulag then.
Absolutely the same thing. So when the people say that what we're getting is a Soviet-style dictatorship that is coming, you've got KBR, which is part of Halliburton that you were talking about, going to be spun off into an IPO, or that's a new offering. And the top 300 members of the Bush cabal, including George Sr., will control a third of the stock. So you're going to have a number of the Bushes, etc., controlling KBR, which is in charge of building these gulags. They're making money on every side of it. Meanwhile, Americans are waving the flag and waving their rights.
I think it was the most amazing thing, Erskine. They had a program, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, on CBS 60 Minutes. I always like to watch that to see what the enemy is doing, but once in a while they'll have something interesting. They lost $8.5 billion, that's B for boy, $1 billion over in Iraq. They have no idea what happened to it. They had these big packages of $100 bills, and they were just throwing them around like, they actually admitted, like footballs. And somehow they just accidentally lost $8.5 billion. And of course, how much Halliburton had stolen, we don't know. I mean, the Army audit had said that they'd stolen an awful lot of money, and but the Army turned around and they said they were going to pay it to them. You know, we decided that they were entitled to, you know, charge gasoline, you know, about three or four times of what it should have cost, and for the military there. I mean, Dick Cheney's organization has made an awful lot of money. Am I suggesting that their people are profiting? Absolutely, they're profiting. And billions and countless billions of dollars have gone down this rat hole while American soldiers are dying over there. And
Dr.
Of course,
Stan,
go ahead.
Did you get your invitation to go hunting with Dick?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think I'd rather go hunting with Dick, though, than go for a car ride with Ted Kennedy.
I think you're right. Now, one of the things that happened when you were talking about giving away the $100 bills, and think of this, ladies and gentlemen, the people over there were given $20 bills, and they started screaming, "We want bennies." Well, you know, the people in America want bennies, too. The people in America need help with the Katrina relief. It is terrible what's still going on with that. The people in America need all sorts of relief to where we can get jobs again, to where we're not being treated in our own country as second-class citizens. But instead, what they're doing is that the Pentagon database, which I'm sure you've talked about, Dr. Stan, the Pentagon database of American kids from 10 to 16 years old, now they're being targeted. The database is being used to target children in that age group through the use of video games, distribution of literature, and secret-controlled Department of Defense websites. Our children are being targeted every single day on television, in the movies, in schools. They are being not only targeted, but they are being systematically programmed. The only way I see that you can avoid it is one of two things. Number one, homeschool your children. Number two, get them away as much as possible from all of these influences. It's the only way that you're going to save them from some of the brainwashing techniques which are being utilized against our kids and against us.
Well, the thing that really disturbed me along that line, Erskine, is that the military has developed techniques to teach people to kill. Now, it is not normal for people, Americans, to want to kill other people. So you condition them. The military has developed games, video games, and you are there, and you are, you know, there, and you're with the controls. You're shooting people. You're killing people. You're blowing them away. But then they've taken those same games that they used to condition the minds of our young men going in the military so they'll be willing to kill. They're using the same thing on our children. Those same identical video games that were developed for the Army to condition people so they would have a conditioned response to kill are being now readily available for our children. That's one of the things that really, really bothers me. But, you know, you talk about the coming dictatorship, and I have no question this is exactly what's planned. And the trouble is, so many people were supported in the name of, well, we have to give up our freedom to protect our freedom. But, you know, it looks to me very much as if the Bush administration is intent upon taking us into a war with Iraq, and of course they're telling it's going to be just an easy little war. It'll be a couple of weeks, you know, then we'll just we'll knock out all their facilities, all their nuclear facilities. But do you remember when they told him it was going to be an easy war in Afghanistan? It was going to be an easy war in Iraq. After all, we've won it in just 5 weeks, four or five weeks. And yet our boys are there and more are dying every day. So, I mean, can we really believe George Bush when he tells us it's going to be a very easy war with Iran?
Oh, absolutely not. There is no such thing as an easy war, especially with Iran. And I don't think that there is going to be a war with Iran at this juncture. I don't see how it can be afforded. China just signed a $7 billion oil agreement with Iran. Russia is in with Iran, supplying them with a lot of different things. And I really believe that it would be World War III, or this would be Armageddon, if they even would consider having a war with Iran.
But they are considering it. But, I mean, the thing is that they're actually making plans for this insanity.
I don't see it happening, Dr. Stan.
Well, I really don't.
I would have said yes, two or three months ago, but I think there have been a number of conditions and a number of changes to where the United States blinked and had to back down. Ready to go to Iran. They sent it over to the United Nations, which is just like throwing it into a box because it's going to sit there.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you're right, and I hope I'm wrong. if I am right, why there's going to be retaliation against the United States. But the reason I think I'm right is because the Iranians want a war with America. That's what's so incredible. And the president of Iran is doing everything to incite an attack on us, which doesn't make sense, but then so much of what's going on in the world today doesn't make any sense.
Coming up on the 16th of this month, Iran opens up its new oil barrage, and what that means is that they are going to take their dollar off of, or their oil off of the American dollar, and it's going into the euro the same way as Norway is now purchasing it, and other countries are going to the euro or to a new gold-backed denier. At that time, the United States dollar is in danger of losing its preeminence as the world currency. If that happens, we will certainly enter into an era of hyperinflation, and it will be a dramatic change, the likes of which we have never seen in America before.
But how do you take the people's attention off of what's happening domestically to our finances? Wouldn't it a very convenient thing be to blame it all on Osama bin Laden and attack Iran?
Well, it's always easier to have a boogeyman to blame it on. And in lieu of a boogeyman, we've got the Oscars, that you could say, and watch that instead. Because it really, you have to figure that a lot of these conditions, there's not a whole lot that we can do about it, because it's being conducted by people that we, there's not a lot that we can do at this juncture. What we can do is try to take care of each other. What we can do is to pray together. What we can do is to realize that we can't turn to our government. We've got to become more independent and more self-reliant.
Well, I certainly wouldn't disagree with anything you said there, and especially the prayer part of it, because I really believe behind everything that's going on today are powerful spiritual forces, both in the United States and in Europe and in Iran, that are intent upon dragging the world into some sort of a conflict, and it may only be a very minor conflict, but what we're doing, in my opinion, is everything possible to inflame the entire Islamic world against America. Look back 5 years, or 6 years. Was there any talk about, you know, a clash of civilizations? Certainly Samuel L. Huntington had written a book on that, and warning us not to do exactly what we've done. As he said, you know, if you really wanted to antagonize the Islamic world, you'd go in there and try to change their way of life and their religion and their form of government. So why would we do that? Samuel Huntington, professor of history at Harvard University, and I recommend his book to everybody out there. It's a book well worthwhile reading, The Clash of Civilizations, and he points out exactly what we would do, what we should not do, is exactly what we have done. Our leaders are not stupid. They know what they're doing. Dr. Samuel Huntington even wrote an article by the same title, The Clash of Civilizations, for Foreign Affairs magazine, for the elite, letting them know exactly what was going to happen when we carried out the programs we're engaged in today. We'll be back here with Erskine, and we'll invite your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, Leslie and I certainly share your concern about the coming economic problem. I mean, there's just no way out of it. With the outsourcing, with the massive derivative debt that we have, with the massive trade deficit and the massive budget deficit and the collapsing pension system, with globalization, with the rising energy costs, and certainly if we get into a crisis with Iran, why, we'll look back on $70 a barrel oil, you know, as the good old days. So,
we'll see $100 a barrel within 24 hours, and it can go up from there. But the situation that we're looking at is by design. It isn't a happenstance. This hasn't spun out of control on these people. They know what they're doing, and it is underneath it all. And the point that has to be made is that underneath it all, it's a satanic plan.
So you won't get any argument from me. You're the first person I've ever talked to, though, that had the temerity to say it's a satanic plan, outside of myself. So, you know, how did you come to that conclusion?
When you've got all the money, Dr. Stan, and they've got all the money, they control the Federal Reserve. Mr. Griffin's written the best book I've ever read, The Creature from Jekyll Island.
Which means they
all the money.
Incidentally, we do carry that book through Radio Liberty. Go ahead.
It is a book that if you don't have it on your shelf, you've got to have it. I mean, it's a necessity. The other thing that I came to the conclusion was, after talking to many different people, they've got all the money, they've got all the power, they control everything that needs to be controlled, from the food sources right up and down the line. The only thing that they don't have control of is spiritual. And look at the money changers, look at the control. The money changers have always been evil. I mean, Jesus, his first act was to throw the money changers out of the temple. He wanted to keep the temple separate from the money changers. These people worship the money. That is all that they worship. There's nowhere for them to go. They know they're in desperate shapes in that regard. And the only thing they don't have is spiritual. And so the only conclusion you can come to is that they're working for dark forces. Whether you believe in the devil or you believe in Satan, these people do, and they are working on Satan's behalf. Many of them running around talking about all these flowing ideas of how beautiful the world can be and all of this, that, and the other. And the fact is, underneath it all, they are just wolves in sheep's clothing because they are pure Satanists. That's the only thing that I could come up with, the only reason for them to spread the ilk and the problems that they are spreading, and to destroy the beautiful democratic republic called the United States of America, is to deliver it to Satan.
And, Chris, if you read the secret doctrine written by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, and I quote that in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, if you read the writings of Manly P. Hall or Albert Pike, there's no question that these people are Satanists. This is who they worship. This is what it's all about. And there's an organization called the Lucius Trust. It used to be the Lucifer Publishing House, organized by Alice Bailey. Now they call it the Lucius Trust. Some of the most powerful and influential people in the world are affiliated with the Lucius Trust. There really are people at the highest levels of our government who have given their life over to pursuit of this, what they refer to as the New Order of the Ages, or this ancient plan which is meant to be fulfilled. The ancient plan which is meant to be fulfilled. Where would you read about it? Why, in President Bush's second inaugural address, second to the last paragraph. Check it out and see.
And where will you see it? See this sign on its inauguration.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Erskine, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Erskine, what were you saying there about the inauguration, the sign of Satan?
Well, when the inauguration occurred, and Ted Gunderson and others have pointed this out to me, and I saw it at the time, my wife said, "Look at that." And I said, "What's that?" He said, "Look at that. They've got their index finger and their little finger up, grabbing the other two fingers with their thumb and giving that sign. It's the sign of Satan." Now, all the Bushes were doing that as the parade went by. This was not by accident. They were signaling their minions, "Yes, we are in control of the United States right now." It's a sign of Satan. This man who's passed himself off as such a good Christian is anything but a Christian. He is a wolf in sheep's clothing. He is a Satanist through and through. The Bushes have been throughout their history. They have he took an oath and laid naked in a coffin in the Skull and Bones. And so, and then you were talking earlier about the Democrats. Are you going to vote for Skull and Bones Kerry or Skull and Bones Bush? It didn't make any difference. When you control both sides of it, you've got Skull and Bones either way. Anybody who would take an oath under the conditions that he did is not what I consider a Christian, unless he would renounce that for all times, which he never will.
Yeah, I'm afraid he never will. And, of course, the thing is, if anybody wants to know about Skull and Bones and its satanic background, we do have a great four-tape set. We've got a number of books on it. It's all available at RadioLiberty.com. You need to understand that Skull and Bones is simply one of a myriad of secret societies operating at the upper echelon of our a nation today, within the highest levels of our government. Now, there are many people who will tell you, well, that symbol you talk about with the index and the small finger out, and then the thumb holding the middle fingers down, that's the sign of the Texas Longhorns. And it may be to some people, you know, in Texas, that's what it is, but is that what they mean? Does it have a double meaning? And so many things going on today have a double meaning.
Well, I think if you're in Texas and you're going to a University of Texas football game and you're flashing up hook'em horns, that's one thing that, and I'm not saying that all Texans are Satanists, because that's a hook'em horns and go Texas. That's fine. That is absolutely fine. It symbolizes the Longhorn. But it doesn't symbolize the Longhorn to people like the Bushes. It didn't symbolize the Longhorn when the sign was flashed by people like President Clinton. It didn't symbolize the Longhorn when the Bush girls were flashing that sign. There was nobody from Texas marching through there when he was doing that. They weren't at a University of Texas football game. They were at the inauguration for the highest office in this land.
Well, what do you think when Anton LaVey gave that same sign? We had lots of pictures of Anton LaVey giving that same sign.
Well, sure there was, and Anton LaVey was, according to everything I've heard, he worked very closely with certain aspects of the government at that time. They have been infiltrating. They've become part of the government for many, many years. And you've got a lot of people who have been exposing it. You've had exposés. Why do you think we've had so many problems with the child abuse, child molestation, the pedophilia, all of this sort of thing that is rampant in Washington? Because this is what they control the senators and Congress people with.
In fact, it was very interesting. In our last hour, we had a retired Army colonel who today works with the chaplains all across the country and sponsors them and directs their activities. And he was talking about when he was in the military at Landstuhl Hospital in Germany and seeing over in a field there in the trees all these men, obviously servicemen, naked. And he went to the base commander and said, "What that's about?" And he said, "They're just Satanists having their ceremonies. Just Satanists. This is on an army base where Satanists are having their ceremonies. This is so foreign to most people, Erskine. They find this is almost impossible to believe. And yet, if you go up on the internet and look up Satanism, you'll find all sorts of sites there for the Satanists and the Wiccas and the Wiccas and the witches and the Rosicrucians and the Theosophists and the occult hierarchy. And the
I did not believe this regarding the pedophilia and all this until I talked to a private investigator, a couple of people who were former police officers, and they said, "Oh, yes, yes." He said, "It's much worse than you could imagine." I said, "Come on, it isn't that major." He said, "It is much worse than you could imagine." And he said, "People won't talk about it inside the department because a lot of the higher-ups get promoted because of their beliefs in Satan."
And, of course, the thing is, you know, if you get into the background of this, when, of course, people have talked about the satanic ritual abuse and satanic crimes, the FBI would send out a man. His job was to say there is no such thing as Satan. I'm from the FBI. I'm an expert. There is no such thing as Satanism in America. I wonder why the FBI would send him out. Could it possibly be that there is a cover-up at the highest levels of our government? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and for those of you who have any questions about what we're talking about and what Erskine is saying, we're carrying a book called Confessions of a Devil Hunter by Gregory Reed, who is actually deeply involved in Satanism, came out of it, and now his job is to lecture the police forces and other groups about the satanic organizations and satanic sacrifices going on, and of course to help people who have been satanically obsessed or satanically possessed, Gregory Reed, we carry his book, Confessions of a Devil Hunter. This is not imaginary. We've talked to so many people who've been involved in these things and have come out. We have Satanism and Deliverance, a four-tape set. But anyway, just go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. But, you know, Erskine, when you tell people about this, you know, and you get on the radio and talk about it, most people say, that could not be true. If it were, Rush Limbaugh would tell us.
I at one point, as I said earlier, I didn't believe it. I had Zeg Gunderson on talking about it. He's bravely come forward talking about that, and he's the former director of the L.A. office of the FBI. And Ted was talking about the Franklin cover-up. He's worked very strongly with that, with John DeCamp. When you're looking at the situation, I thought he was, well, Ted's just an old man. He's a little bit confused. He's got the Satan hiding behind everything. And, you know, these things just can't be. But then I talked to a couple of retired police officers, like I said, and they explained it to me. They said, oh, yes, it's much worse than you could ever imagine, Erskine. And then I gave it more credence and started looking and doing a little bit of investigating on my own, and I found out that this is one of the methods of control that they're using. And then Alex Jones and others have come out with tapes and information about Bohemian Grove, where the top leaders go. And they aren't going there to worship Jesus. They aren't going there just to have a party. They are there for a specific purpose, to worship Satan. Now, you look at what Mr. Bush and Mr. Kerry went through at the Skull and Bones, and you have the videotapes on that. It goes back to a German satanic society that was brought to America. It has direct roots to the German satanic society, which also connects it up with the religion of the Nazism, which was the Thule religion. So all of this connects up very strongly. So what you're seeing happening is certainly by plan, by design. And if America doesn't wake up, America is going to lose its soul, and that's what they're after, is the soul of America. The money they've got, now they want the soul.
And, of course, the thing is that anybody who cannot see the fact there is a conspiracy against Christianity today has to be incredibly naive. Incidentally, the title of the book is Confessions of a Devil Hunter. Pardon me, it's The Diary of a Devil Hunter. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and we were talking about this book, The Diary of a Devil Hunter, not Confessions of a Devil Hunter. It's an excellent book. It's one of those available from Radio Liberty. We do have four tape sets on the Bohemian Grove. We have certainly a four tape set on the Skull and Bones, well, a number of books on the Skull and Bones, but for the skeptic out there who said, well, I mean, these are all written by really sort of crazy people. Let me suggest, I think, one of the most significant books in my library. I put it in the top five books that I have. It's called Fire in the Minds of Men. It's written by the gentleman who was the Librarian of Congress today. Before that, he was in charge of the Smithsonian. And, of course, this book, Fire in the Minds of Men by James H. Bullington, starts out telling about the secret societies that were behind the American Revolution, the French Revolution, and all the revolutions subsequent to that, including the Communist Revolution in Russia in 1917 and the Communist Revolution in Cuba in 1959, pointing out that they all have a common origin. And it really began many hundreds of years before the American Revolution, when the aristocrats of Europe took their lighted candles off of the Christian altars and moved them onto the occult altars. And it had to do with secret societies, it had to do with masonry, it had to do with secret organizations and occult organizations, and this was the major force behind the World Revolution. Now, coming from James H. Bullington, who is no friend of ours, he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, he's a member of the elite, and he's not going to tell you about its influence in America, but he talks about the Illuminati. He talks about the influence of Masonry. He talks about these dark influences at every aspect of our society, the society of the just, the Carbonari, all of these secret societies, literally dozens of them, all working towards the common goal of the world revolution that is continuing today and will not be completed until, of course, the Novus Ordo Seclorum, the new order of the ages. And, of course, this is what it's all about. And President Bush said in his inaugural address, second inaugural address, when he talked about what our founders declared, a new order of the ages. And then he went on to say, after a little verbiage, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. When our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. Now, not was meant to be fulfilled, is meant to be fulfilled. It's being fulfilled now by our leaders. That's why I believe they're going to destroy this country, and I believe that they're going to take us into expand the conflict in the Middle East. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that Erskine's right. Go ahead, Erskine.
The other thing that I'm seeing, though, is economically, no matter what happens in the Middle East, with what all is coming, we are in for a real, real shock coming this year. For one thing, any of your listeners who have safety deposit boxes, don't put any money, don't put anything like that that you would consider valuable in any safety deposit box, because new Homeland Security is exercising its power to identify the contents of safety deposit boxes right now. It isn't a rumor going around. This is what is happening. Under Patriot 3, it's certainly going to happen. The last time this was done, 1934, under the German Bank Security Enhancement Act, the government gained authority to seize contents of safe deposit boxes, not only in Germany, but most other countries. And this is the same in the United States. Well, I'll move my money to Canada, or I'll move it to Mexico. No, no, you put in a safety deposit box there, you're going to be under the same thing. And also, all U.S. banks have already been sent a preliminary circular from the Federal Reserve. New power has been noted. Unlike what you're hearing, this is all sitting there. It's already in effect, and they are going to do it to where they can go at any safety deposit boxes they want to. They are planning. The reason they're putting in a lot of these controls is they're planning on economic collapse.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I had some friends who were in Portugal. They were living in the Azores, and I guess this is probably about 75 or 76. And the communists had basically taken over Portugal and the Azores. And this friend of mine, a woman, told me she went into the bank, and she'd been living there for some time, and said to the bank teller, "I'd like to get into my safety deposit box." And he looked at her and smiled and shook his head from side to side, saying no. For he said, "Are you sure you want to get into your safety deposit box today?" And she learned, of course, when she saw this signal he was giving her, she said no. And the reason was because every safety deposit box that they opened, one of the communists went with them to take out any gold or other precious things, anything of value, in that safety deposit box. And of course, the people working in the bank opposed the communists, which take over the country. And of course, eventually, of course, they did have a revolution. They got rid of the communists. But this is the first thing that they do in any totalitarian country. They go into your safety deposit boxes, and they want your wealth because they control your wealth. They control you.
They've already announced that they're going to do that. Now, what I found to be most important is who is going to be controlling so much in the United States. General Primakov, General Karpov, General Marcus Wolf, all KGB people putting together a company under the auspices of General Richard Secord that is going to put together neighborhood watch associations as civilian defense force. Well, what we're talking about is the brown shirts. It's going to be a new Gestapo in the United States. It's being put together right now. And you talk about outsourcing to the ports of Dubai. You've got the Russian KGB that's going to be running Homeland Security.
Well, now, Erskine, certainly for our listeners out there who might want to challenge that, where can they read about that? Is it written up anyplace?
It's written up. One of the places you can go to is almartinraw.com. That's a very, very good place to find out about what's going on, and he cites a number of sources.
All right, fine.
So that would be a place, a website I'd recommend, and the introductory part, the part that I've told you about, is certainly there on almartinraw.com. And another place you can go and check out who my guests are going to be. Like this weekend, I've got Dr. Jim Fetzer, University of Minnesota. Did a lot of work on the Kennedy assassination. Now he's talking about 9/11. And that's going to be on Erskine Overnight this weekend. So that should be an extremely good show with Jim Fetzer.
Why don't you tell our listeners when what time you're on and how they can listen to you there on...
9 o'clock Pacific time. We're on a number of stations around the country. If you're living in Madison, if you're living in Phoenix, if you're living in Lexington, Kentucky, we're on a number of stations around. Or you can go to GCN Live, GCNLive.com.
GCNLive.com. Are you on the shortwave at all?
No, no, we are not. But they can go to GCNLive.com and get us there. And it's at 9 o'clock Pacific time. Or you can go to Erskine, or if you want to write me, E-R-S-K-I-N-E, E-R-S-K-I-N-E on radio.com. Now, the next week after Jim Fetzer, I've got D.V. Kidd, who's going to be on. You know D.V.
Yes, and I know Jim Fetzer, too. He's a very articulate spokesman.
He is a brilliant person to have on, just absolutely brilliant, and as you say, very, very articulate spokesperson to have on, and I certainly enjoy. I've known Jim for, oh, probably 10 years. He's a wonderful person to have on.
And of course, D.V. Kidd will be excellent as well. D.V. is, in fact, we're having D.V. on, I think, tomorrow evening, as I recall, tomorrow evening in this same time slot, so I hope everybody will be listening, but you want to hear Erskine's program, and understand, we're in real trouble, and we're in real trouble financially, we're in real trouble morally, we're in real trouble militarily, we're in real trouble politically, but the greatest thing at all is we're in real trouble spiritually for this country. And I believe that if we don't have repentance in this country, if our people don't turn from their wicked ways, and you know, why God will never, never forgive our sin and heal our land.
Well, you have to say, when you hear somebody like President Bush saying, God bless America, you have to say why. Under what the conditions that we're under right now, we've had God thrown out of everything, out of everywhere, out of every aspect of our life, to where people can't even say Merry Christmas anymore. You no longer have Easter. It's all spring break. You no longer have the Bible readings that we did when we went to school in the morning. You no longer have any of the semblances that we've had. You've got churches that are saying Father, Mother, Brother, whoever, you know, instead of God the Father. You've got so much that has diluted down the message of Jesus Christ, and they have politicized it, and they have made it politically correct to the point to where it bears very little semblance of what the Bible says. A lot of the churches are to blame for what's gone on, because they have gone along to get along.
And of course, now, of course, you can get a nice, big, fat, profitable grant from the government under the faith-based programs that the current administration has put out. And that's not to help the churches. That's to control the churches, exactly as they did in Hitler's Germany. A wonderful book written by Erwin Lutzer, senior editor at senior pastor at the Moody Bible Church in Chicago, called Hitler's Cross. Tells about what happened to Christianity under Adolf Hitler. And it's sort of like deja vu all over again. As you read that book, Hitler's Cross by Erwin Lutzer, let me recommend it to every one of our listeners, and I think it's so important. But you know, Erskine, you know, I came to know the Lord, you know, almost 42, 43 years ago, because I recognized the evil that was in the world, and I recognized that there was evil. Then there had to be a God. There had to be a force on the other side. And so sort of coming in back through the back door to Christianity, but of course, once you make that final decision that this story of the Bible is true, then of course you begin to grow in your faith. And one reason I do what I do, and you know, is because I want, hopefully, to point people towards, you know, towards our Lord, and because that is their only hope. That's the only thing that's going to sustain them during the difficult times that lie ahead. What are your thoughts on that?
You haven't got any other choice. I had a gentleman on, Norio Hayakawa, and Norio came over from Japan at that point about 8 or 10 years earlier, and we were talking about Area 51, and everyone said, oh, it's aliens, and it's our space brothers, and one thing another. And Norio went over there, and he said, you know, they've got things that they can make you believe you're seeing things, and they can make you believe you're hearing things. He said it's gotten to a point where you can't trust what you see, and you can't even trust what you hear. I said, well, Noriel, it's gotten to such a point you can't trust what you see or what you hear. What can you trust? He said, you can trust Jesus. And this is a man who came over as an atheist. I said, what brought you to that conclusion? He said, you can't trust anything of the world that you see or hear anymore. You've got to filter it through Jesus. Jesus is our only hope today.
Well, I think that is really so important. And, you know, I think that if you really analyze what's going on, you realize that there's a spiritual component to everything. And if this is true, and there really are these secret societies and satanic organizations that permeate every aspect of our life, then we can't stand against this on our own. There's absolutely no way that I could ever have any hope of accomplishing anything. And what I've accomplished, and I'm sure what Erskine and others are doing, what we're doing, is through the grace of God.
You have to remember, what you have to keep in the back of your mind is, what does it benefit you to gain the world and lose your soul? You are born with this precious soul, and you've got to stand up and fight. And unlike some of the churches are saying, well, Jesus is coming, don't worry about it. Well, I don't want to say, Jesus, I was waiting on you, and, you know, I figured I didn't have to worry because I knew you were coming. I believed in you. Did you ever stand up? Did you ever stand up and say, I believe in Jesus Christ? Did you ever stand up and say, we've got to stop Satan now? Or did you just say, well, Jesus is coming, he'll take care of it? You have to fight for Jesus. I don't want to be standing next to him saying, you know, I figured you'd be along any day now, and so I didn't do anything. No, I had to get along with these people. You understand, Jesus? Yeah, you don't want to make excuses of that nature, I don't think, on the final day. Maybe I'm simplifying things too much, Dr. Stan.
No, not at all. I agree with everything you're saying. You know, very often I will get these people and saying, well, it's all in the Lord's hands. You know, we should not be involved. All we should be doing is praying. And I say, well, that's a very interesting point of view. Tell me, do you carry fire insurance on your house? Well, yes, of course, you know. Do you take out health insurance or automobile insurance? Why do you do that? Well, because we're here on this earth and we have to be part of it. And we have to act as if it's up to us and pray that the house doesn't burn down or that we don't get sick or the car doesn't have an accident. That's up to God. But, you know, in the final analysis, if you believe the Bible is the Word of God, which I do, if you read Ezekiel 3 and Ezekiel 33, you'll find out that certain people are called to be watchmen. They are to be the watchmen on the call and to sound the alarm when the enemy is coming. Well, the enemy is not only coming, the enemy is already inside the city, and they're working right in Washington, D.C.
But Dr. Stan, don't you believe this is the most exciting period to be alive? Because we are separating the wheat from the chaff during this period of time. This is a period when you are going to be called upon to stand up for Jesus. If you don't stand up for him, then you're against him. It really is that simple. This is a period where you have to profess, yes, I do believe in Jesus. And yes, I do believe that there are certain things in this society that must be stopped. This is a period when you are being called to make a difference. You've got the books, you've got the videos that will show the inroads that they're making, how they're making it, and how they're doing it. And get those while you can, because I'm telling you, there's going to be an office of censorship coming in, and you aren't going to be able to hear this. You aren't going to be able to hear Dr. Stan much longer. This is coming about. Get this information now so that you can be prepared, know what's going on, and you can stand up for Jesus. You can stand up for what's right. You can stand up for the real America.
And I agree absolutely. And, you know, yes, this is an exciting time to be alive. But what an exciting time to have a voice. I mean, I have a voice, you have a voice, and there are a few dozen people, our friends out there, who are doing exactly the same thing. And, you know, what a privilege it really is to be able to talk to people all over the world through the miracle of radio and internet and shortwave and now being up on Telstar 5. So, you know, really, I feel that I'm so thankful that God has opened this up for me, because I don't take any credit for myself.
Well, absolutely, God will open that door for you, and in the darkest period, if you believe in Jesus, the doors will be open. But Jesus wants you to stand up for him, and those of us who are trying to get out the truth are in our own way trying to stand up for Jesus, and in the final days, I want to say, hey, Jesus, I was there with you. I wasn't waiting for you. I wasn't
the presumed valid debt of American is in reality invalid and fraudulent.
All right, fine. Well, we'll ask him when we get back here during the... let's just keep you right on the line there. We're going to have to take a little break there. And then we'll ask him, and of course, somebody said the other day, and I thought it was so good, you know, what's the difference between monopoly money and the money that the Federal Reserve puts out? And the answer is, of course, with a monopoly, if you're playing monopoly, there's only a certain specific amount of money there. With the Federal Reserve, it's unlimited. Well, this is Dr. Stan Erskine. We have Jack calling from Michigan, his regular caller.
I'm not really sure what the question was.
Well, the question was, is the debt that we incur under this fiat money system, is it really valid?
Oh, well, the interest that we're paying to these banksters is quite valid on this debt. Of course, the debt is created out of thin air, but the interest is certainly not created out of thin air. And by the second quarter of 2009, we're not going to have enough money to pay these robber barons their interest that they are requesting. So, yes, it's valid in that sense.
And since they make the laws, Jack, it's valid. And I would suggest that you go ahead and pay your debts. But understanding the whole system is as phony as a $3 bill. Or maybe I should say as any of the money that they're putting out. Thanks so much. Anything else, Jack?
I just wanted to ask Erskine, when he has time, to go to a website. It's called The Aware Group, theawaregroup.com, and look at their 13th anniversary issue. I think he could have a really marvelous radio program on just that one issue.
Theawaregroup.com. You got it. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks so much, Jack.
Thanks for the call.
Incidentally, Jack, are you listening on shortwave internet, or because we're not out in Detroit anymore?
No, sir. It's 600...
Okay, you're getting the station out of Flint.
Yes, indeed.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That's Jack calling from... we were on in Detroit, and then they sold the station, but we cover a lot of Detroit through the Flint station, which is 600 a.m. And, of course, if you're listening to the program, you don't need to know what it is. If you're not listening, why, I wouldn't do any good to tell you. But anyway, Erskine, I want to tell you how much I've really enjoyed the program. You know, when we do a program... sometimes we never know how it's going to end up. I didn't expect this was going to be almost an altar call program, but I appreciate so much your telling us this, because maybe this is what we need a lot more of, and maybe I better be doing a lot more of this, because I believe, as you do, that time is going short. Do you want to just finish up the program? We're just about out of time.
It is a spiritual battle that we're in. Either you're going to stand up and be counted, or you're going to fall down by the wayside. It indeed is a spiritual battle. We've got a lot. I don't talk much about it on my program. We've got lots and lots of things that we need to deal with every day, and we're being called to do it. So stand up for America, stand up for God.
God bless. And remember, if you don't stand up now and say no, you may well be one day on your knees saying yes. But I think we're all called to do what's right. And, of course, not to renounce our God, but proclaim the truth of his message. Good night, Erskine. God bless you, and we look forward to having you with us again soon.
God bless you. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was really a pleasant program, and I hope you enjoyed it out there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly we hope that many of you out there in the audience enjoyed the program this evening. It was almost like an altar call, and yet maybe we ought to be doing more of that in the process of what we're doing, because this truly is, as Erskine says so well, a spiritual battle. So we hope that many of you out there will decide you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family and help us as we reach out 5 hours a day by radio, 5 hours a day by internet, 4 hours a day on shortwave, certainly 9 hours a day on one satellite, and we're on about three different satellites at the present time. We have a unique opportunity to reach people, actually four satellites at the present time. We have a unique opportunity to reach people all throughout the world. As I said on an earlier program today, we got an email from a ship's officer who's on a ship that plies the Atlantic and the Mediterranean, and he was saying how well our satellite program on Telstar 5 is coming in. If you know people who have difficulty getting our programs, it's very easy to get us on Telstar 5 and certainly very inexpensive to pull us down 9 hours a day on satellite, but you won't get a thing accomplished. But you'll sure learn a lot, and this is why we're doing what we're doing. We're trying to teach you so you can teach others. I look upon America as almost like Camelot, and I'll never forget that little rhyme. That it was a story at the very end of the story of Camelot when the king is about to go into battle against Lancelot, and he knows he's going to be killed, and there's a boy who wants to go to battle with him. And he says, no. You cannot go into this battle. You've got to go back and tell people the truth about what Camelot was about. Let it never be forgot that once there was a spot that was known as Camelot. And America, in some respects, is like Camelot. A wonderful, wonderful, idealistic country where really there was truth and righteousness, but what people didn't recognize, that while there was truth and righteousness and we were a Christian nation, there were always dark occult forces here working to take over our government, to lead the world into the new world order, and to establish democracies throughout the world. And that is the goal of the evil people. It is this idea of a new order of the ages. This whole idea of this ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. And that's what they're working for. And if you read the president's speech there, the next to the last paragraph of his second inaugural address, he will tell you that when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. They were acting on an ancient hope that was meant to be fulfilled. What is the ancient hope? The new order of the ages. Well, I thought that the president was elected to govern America. No, he is elected to bring about the new order of the ages, but you were never told that. Or the truth about the secret society that both he and John Kerry belong to. You need to get the, I hope many of you want to get the video, DVD actually, it's called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, my DVD of that talk, and then if you'd like a free copy of my newsletter, our number 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our radio, our website, RadioLiberty.com. Pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.